On this episode of the Dudes and Dads podcast, we talk with our friend Dustin Carr about developing the culture of our family.
Joel.
Andrew.
Speaking of culture.
Oh,
I don't know where I was going with that.
Oh, well, we have a culture here at the Dudes and Dads podcast. We've never overtly said what it is. I like to call it's the culture of chill, cool, and overly relaxed at times, which is hopefully you're picking up that.
This music totally brings that. Like, yeah. I mean, it says chill and relax. Yeah. And
as always, we don't say this enough. Dudes and Dads theme song officially provided by none other than Mr. Scott Allen, who knows how to lay down some sweet tracks.
In fact, if you've not checked it out, we did some. So he used to be a professor. Was that
he was an instructor?
Grace?
And he still
instructor
is. He's still teaching
Grace.
Classes at Grace
and talking about. Like music and all broadcast and all sorts of stuff. And so he said, hey, we would love to have you come over and do a live or do an episode.
Yeah.
And our students can mix it.
Yeah.
And just give them content
his
to
students,
mix. So.
His students benefit from the Dudes and Dads podcast. And we, in exchange, benefited from his mixing and playing ability. So there it is.
We said, you know, kind of bluesy, kind of jazzy. And that's what
I used the term dirty organ. That's what I told him. And that's what we got.
That's what that is.
That's what we got. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dudes and Dads podcast. Glad to have each and every one of you along for the ride. Excited to have just a great conversation with our guest here, Dustin, who we'll introduce in a second here. But in the meantime, Andy, I do want to ask, you guys are ready. Are you ready to go back to school? Are you
ready? I'm ready to have the kids go back to school. I don't know if the kids are ready to. Hattie is. Hattie loves school and loves all of that stuff.
The youngest ones, they're all about school.
But Reagan is like, no, I'm not ready.
We're going to put it off as long as possible. Yeah. I'm ready for school as we always are because schedules are our friend and routines are good and healthy. They are given to us by God himself. Who are we? Who are we, Andy, to fight against that power? So
exactly.
So this coming week, as everybody starts getting back on schedule, I'm having a one-on-one meeting with each of my kids tomorrow. And this one-on-one meeting is here's your schedule. So here's the academic piece. Here's your extracurricular activities and when you'll be doing those. So let's have a plan for when you're going to be doing the other work that is a part of you being part of this family.
Yes.
So that I can do my work and your mom can do her work and that we all maintain a loving relationship that does not involve high-pitched screaming
from anybody.
Pointing fingers, all of that. So listen, I am in the total naive best case scenario standpoint right now as I'm talking to you about this. Andy, we'll touch base. And you know what? In fact, Dustin is going to be my accountability partner on this, too. He can text me tomorrow evening and say, tell me about your meetings. What was the outcome? Let's talk ROI, and then we'll see where we can go from there.
Perfect.
That's the game plan.
Okay. Perfect. I'm excited to have Dustin back. But first, we do have Everence as a sponsor, and we would love to hear from them.
Hi, this is Ben Holden, Certified Financial Planner with Everence Financial Michiana, sharing today's Everence Money Minute. You've probably heard about Roth IRAs and may have a good understanding of them, but if not, let me give you a quick overview. Roth IRAs differ from traditional IRAs in that they're funded with income that's already been taxed. The main advantage of a Roth IRA is that after it's been open for at least 5 years and you've reached age 59 and a half, you are able to take both the principal that you invested and any earnings out as distributions tax-free. Additionally, contributions are available for withdrawal at any time without tax or penalty, but that doesn't apply to earnings or funds that have been converted to Roth. While a Roth IRA isn't a silver bullet that will help you achieve all of your investment goals, it is a powerful tool that should be considered as part of your retirement and tax planning in combination with traditional retirement accounts and non-retirement investment options. If you're interested in finding out more about Roth IRAs or the many other financial services provided by Everence Financial, contact me, Ben Holden, at 574-537-8773 or head over to our website at everence.com/Michiana.
By the way, Andy, did you mix the music on the back of that one too?
I put the music in.
Gosh, so good. I mean, I want to know more about, I mean, it's my job to know about Roth, but I want to know more. Right. I want to know more. Thank you, Ben. And thank you to our sponsors over at Everence. Well, hey, without further ado, Andy, you want to introduce our guest, Dustin Carr. Glad to have him, a returning guest.
Dustin was on.
How long ago?
I think our first season. I think maybe like episode 3 or it was pretty early.
Way early in this thing.
Early adopter, early influencer of this show.
I'm glad it's still around for me to come back.
You and me both.
I'm not sure we had any napkin bets going on then.
We had no idea.
Hold on. So I just looked it up. It would be season 1, episode 6.
Okay. Six. All right. So we are 7.5 years into this show, and that just goes to show that we've been trying to get Dustin on for a while. Due to my administrative inabilities and due to Dustin's also pretty busy schedule, it's taken a bit. So the Lord,
I saw Andy at the fair and he goes, has Joel talked to you? I said, yeah, we tried. He's like, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure he was doing what he was supposed to.
Yeah.
So he double checked on you.
That's fair. He needs to.
So someone has to.
We finally got it. So Dustin, we're super thrilled to have you here. Dustin, you do a lot of work, coaching, consulting, helping organizations be better tomorrow than they are today. So we'd love for you to tell us about that work. But I would say, you know, as we always do, we want to start off with the dad stats. So tell us about your family. They are obviously years older than they were last time we spoke and are in different places in life. So that's fun too. But yeah, give us a rundown. What's going on with your family?
So my wife and I, Amber, high school sweethearts, married now just over 27 years.
Nice.
She works here locally at Goshen Health. Yep. So I've got 4 boys, 23. The oldest one, Evan, just graduated from Trine with a degree, and he got a job in his field of study, which feels...
That's a miracle.
It's a win like I've never experienced before. So that's great. My second son, Joah, is going into his third and final year at Northern Michigan.
Yes.
Up in Marquette, way up in the UP.
God's country.
Yeah, it is gorgeous up there. It is. My third son, Owen, just graduated high school. He's off to IU. He's going to be going into the Kelly School of Business. Double major, finance and accounting. He's going to do great. Looking forward to that. Even though my wife's a Purdue grad,
She
had to swallow hard and refuse to buy anything at the IU bookstore, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And then my youngest son, Liam, is going to be 17, going into his junior year at Northridge.
Great.
High school.
Great. Yeah. Dustin's youngest son and my eldest son are the same age. Just put that together, people. Do what you will with that. But this season, Dustin, as we were just talking before we started recording, of really the conversations of launching our kids well, getting them out into the world. Sometimes we get them out into the world and they return to us for a period of time. but nevertheless, we're never done being parents. We're always parents. We're always guides. We enter that more that mentor relationship later on than we do mom and dad. We hope that's the direction it goes. But really early on in the conversation we want to have about culture creation tonight, because I know we talk a lot about it and you'll give us the framework for like how you've discussed it in the business world, but then also have translated into really our families. When I think about culture, it's the buzzword. It's the frequent buzzword in our places. We're constantly talking about culture. And I often just have to stop and ask the question, does anybody really know? Have we defined it? Does anybody know? I feel like we're using this term all nimbly bimbly like, but what is it? Why does it matter? I want to start there with you, Dustin, and then kind of say, hey, here's how we see it in the business world, in our places of work. And then what it is, how you have observed it and how you've initiated it kind of within a family setting. And then I would just love to kind of jam on that because I think all of our families, whether we're intentional about it or not, they all got a culture.
Everybody does.
Mm. So what is it and how do we know and how do we talk about it? So start us there.
Yeah. I think that's a great point because if I were to get a room full of leaders, even a room full of dads together and go, all right, define culture. I'd get a bunch of words, right? And, yeah, and none of them would be bad, right? It's a vibe. I mean, you guys were talking about the intro music. You were talking about the culture of the of the song, right? And so none of that's bad. The problem is I think there's really, those are good intentions, but they're faulty definitions. Mm-hmm. So at its foundation for us, as we think about culture, it's simply what your systems produce and what your relationships can tolerate. Mm. That's it. So we think of it as an equation. So culture is operational excellence multiplied by relational health. So think about a box and think about the x-axis. So that's the one that goes left and right. Okay. That is operational excellence from 0 to 10, right? You're somewhere, your organization right now. And for now you can think about your organization. If I were to ask you, hey, how good are you at all the things you do? So your system, your structure, your process, the clarity you have, the accountability, how effective are the meetings, or how many meetings are on your schedule? You're like, I should stop going to that one, yeah, right? Because it should be an email. So that's the operational excellence piece. And then up the y-axis, the up and down, that's relational health. So this is all the things that it takes great teams to work together. So you think about trust, respect, the psychological safety. This is sort of the, can I be myself when I show up? Do I have to perform, right? What are the sidebar conversations look like? What are the meetings after the meetings look like? And all of those types of things. And so what happens is culture happens whether you do anything or not, right? And so we talk about these two forces on culture. The first one's the pull. Culture doesn't get better on its own. It doesn't, right? And so I put it in the context of, think about your daily production meeting you have every day. If you just skipped it for a month, things probably don't get better, right? It will naturally get worse. Why? In my world, because people are involved, right? You don't have to I think people as much, if you go, well, people are naturally good, you should go babysit a room full of 5-year-olds, because we're not, right? You don't teach kids to keep toys to themselves.
Yeah. No.
You teach them to share, right? We are born sort of evil, and some of us never grow out of it. So the pull just happens. It doesn't get better on its own. So if you have to fight the pull, the only way you do that as a leader or part of a team is the push. What am I actively doing to move culture in the direction I want it to go? And so when we talk to leaders about culture, I go, well, if you can't tell me exactly what you did today to get operationally better or relationally more healthy, I know which way your culture went. Yeah. Right. And so anytime we do an assessment, we've got this full assessment that we give organizations. We tell them, wherever your dot is, it's a snapshot. It's a family photo. We did family photos when our boys were 10, 8, 6, and 4. We went up to Lake Michigan and sunset, and the photo was beautiful. The 17 minutes leading up to that photo,
that's right.
And the 4 minutes after, were a tire fire and a dumpster rolling down a hill. Like, it was awful.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the photo, social media worthy. Right. And so the problem is people love to talk about their culture. And so they point at a mission statement on the wall. Mm-hmm. They point at their core values. They point out that one day of giving a year that they do that. Meanwhile, everyone dreads going back to work the next day because we know it's going to be anything less than giving. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's, how do we fight those? So what happens is based off that operational excellence and relational health scale, you end up in these five, what we call these five zones of culture. They're not judgments. They're just simply locations. So we always start in the middle, sort of the middle of the box is what we call default. So here's work-wise, here's how I define default. It's fine. It's not bad. I've worked at worse places. Some things happen and it's okay. I mean, certainly doesn't suck as bad as the last. And then they fill in where they came from last. Right. But the problem is no one builds anything in default. It just sort of goes. The real danger of default isn't that it hurts, it's that it actually doesn't hurt enough to actually do anything. Mm-hmm. Teams land here because you've got leaders that are maintainers, right? They protect the work standards. Well, this is the way we've always done it. This is a part of great organizations that have longevity built into them, that have leaders that have been there for decades or multi-generations. Well, this is how my dad did it. And this is how we can get stuck in just maintaining. And then you also get sort of the someday leader. Well, listen, we'll get to it right when this quarter's over. Well, we got to get through this product launch. Well, and so they put it off and then the pull just sort of does its work. So that's sort of in the middle of the box. We go to the very bottom left-hand corner. So this is a team that's operationally really bad, relationally poor. I sort of say that we suck at what we do and we don't even like each other while we suck at it. That's dying. Right. And if you think of it like a bathtub,
I felt this.
Okay. It's a ghost ship, right? The best talent's already left. Anyone that's there is either there because they're too close to retirement to leave. They haven't found something yet, or it's just apathy. Mm-hmm. Like nothing's working and everybody knows it. And it's really hard to get out of that, because the closer you get to a dying culture, the faster that drain spins and just sort of sucks them down. Right. So that's at the very bottom. We don't thankfully a lot of teams there. You'll find some individuals and good teams that are feeling that. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to make that distinction that we can have two people on the same team and they're not in the same place. Right. Mm-hmm. Because we're all different and that applies to our kids and we'll get there in a second. So now think about an organization that's really good operationally. So they're an 8 or a 9 or a 10 standard system process, the metrics, all that's there, but the relational health is lacking. We call that the dread culture. Mm. And by the way, and within the box, it's colored yellow. It's not red. There is nothing wrong with being operationally excellent. There are a lot of nonprofits that need to be better operationally. There are a lot of businesses that need to be better operationally. We need to press for that. The problem is it puts performance over people. Mm-hmm. This is where you get leaders go, but have you seen the quarterly financials? Why are you crying? We're winning, mm-hmm. right? And it's all about the numbers. And so as long as I put up, that's all that matters. And we sort of then start to show up that way. The dread culture is one where you stand in the shower a little longer on Monday and go, oh, can I do this again? Like how, and eventually, no matter the amount of pay, you'll be out. I've said it lots that you can only pay people so much for so long to be so miserable and they're going to leave anyways, regardless. And so that's dread, right? Dread cultures don't fail loudly. They succeed painfully until they implode spectacularly. Oh. Yeah. That's it, right? And you've all seen cultures that they're like, that was a great company. They were, what happened?
Yeah,
I know what happened. Eventually under the pressure, they crack. So you've got dread down in the bottom right. So if you go the other way, high relational health. We all like each other. We get along. We're there for each other. We're a family. By the way, there's not many real red flags, but if you work for a place that says family, and unless your last name matches theirs or you've married one of the daughters, you just be leery of that. Because when things get hard, while I probably could pick which kid I would lay off and cut from the payroll, you wouldn't do that. But in businesses, you do. So anyways, but they're really bad operationally. Mm-hmm. They can't get anything done. Meetings are ineffective. And we call that dreamy. It's like head in the clouds. Isn't this great? Yeah. I mean, we haven't hit our numbers in a year and a half and you know, we're barely making money or we're bleeding money. High empathy, low accountability. Mm. Feedback gets softened so much. It doesn't even sound like feedback, right? There's no actual care. It has a lot of heart. It just no spine. And we all know there's no kindness in protecting people if we're going to help them grow. Right. And so, you get leaders like the conduit, right? They just pass down what's ever given to them. And they're, I'm trying to protect my team. I'm going to protect my team from this leader. So I'm here. And so I want to maintain a relationship without the results or you get some leaders. They're the recovering dread leader. Like I grew up in that environment. I don't ever want to go back. So I'm going to be a complete pushover the other way. Right. So these are these zones and where we're getting to is this upper right-hand corner. And it's what we call dauntless. It's performance with people, right? So dread puts performance over people. Dreamy puts people over performance. Dauntless is performance with and through people, right? It's high challenge and it's high support, high accountability. It's not, I'm not going to be brutally honest. I'm going to have candor, which is means I'm going to have truth with a bent towards relationship. There's no fear. So I can tell you, hey, I screwed up. No, that's on me. I own that. Right? You don't get that a lot in dread environments. Mm-hmm. We hold people accountable because we care. And you don't arrive at dauntless. You sort of fight for that. So you only get there on purpose. When we talk about the push, we talk to leaders and go, okay, where do you need to push? Sometimes you have to push operationally. Sometimes you have to push relationally. The trick, though, is that you can't solve operational problems with relational solutions and vice versa. So think of it this way. You go, man, we really need a better system. We really need a better process. We really need to get that SOP figured out. No, you don't. You need the guy you've been paying to do the job the way he's supposed to do the job and stop letting him think because he's the brother-in-law of the cousin of the owner that he can do it the way he wants. You try to solve a relational issue with an operational problem. Mm-hmm. The flip side is true. You go, well, we really need another person back there. I'm so short-staffed. No, you're not. Your systems are so messed up that if you add another person, you're simply going to make more people frustrated. So the job of leaders is go, where do I push? Do I push operationally or do I push relationally? And by the way, we all have a natural lean as leaders. You bring me a problem, I'm leaning towards operational. I'm probably softened a little bit, but I'm much more that way. You take my wife a problem, she's probably leaning relationally. Mm-hmm. So it's why she brings me a problem. She gets two sentences in and I go, stop, I got it. Do this, this, and this is fixed. What's next? You want to know what I've learned after 27 years of marriage? She doesn't want three problems, three steps to fix her problem. No. She doesn't want me to say a word. Yep. She just wants me to listen.
Yeah.
And lean in relationally. Mm. So I do. And I nod and bite my tongue and go, we could have solved this last time, have you? But we say that into our heads now. That's it. So when you just think about those zones, default, dying, dread, dreamy, and dauntless, operational excellence and relational health, it's the same way at home. It's the same way at home, right? Operationally excellent. Like what are the standards? What you were talking about, the routines, the one-on-ones you're going to have, right? That's an operational excellence kind of thing. What are the things we're going to do? What are the consequences? What are the chores? What's the expectations, right? And then you've got the relational. So that's not only how the house runs, that's operational. It's how does the house feel, right? Like, can they trust you? How quickly are they to come to you when something happened to them? What is their presence like? Can they bring you the hard things? And so, by the way, the poll works on families the same way, right? Like, stop having date night with your wife for a month or a year and see if the relationship gets better. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get better on its own. It only gets better with a push.
It reminds me of what you were talking about last week in your sermon. You were talking about relationship with God, but you said there is no middle ground. There's no neutral.
There's forward and there's backwards.
That's no neutral. It is the pole, right? It's that idea that we as humans, it's that slow, steady, without even knowing it's gotten worse. Yeah. All of a sudden, how did I get here? Right. Mm-hmm. And we see it as parents. Like, how did I get here? My kids are now 18 and they're leaving. And all these things I wanted to do with them. Right. Yeah. Which is when the first time I came on was around the Dear Boys book. And so the book had Dauntless at heart before I even ever labeled Dauntless, right? That entire book is a push.
Yeah.
It's a push towards operational excellence, defining what manhood looks like and relationally how I'm going to walk my kids there. So think about a default family. They're right in the middle. Yeah, they're fine. They're more like a logistics company that has the same last name, right? The calendar runs the house, right? What do we have tonight? And by the way, there was a long stretch where my wife and I just felt like, all right, we're going to different places, right? Four kids and they've got different events. Like, you're going here, I'm going here. Don't forget him. And I'll see you at dinner.
Yeah.
Right. And that's exactly what it was. And everyone's fine, but nobody is really known. So how was school? That's fine. Right. How was work? That's fine. It's exhausting. Same stuff, but you know, it was fine. And so both parents, as it relates to our kids, both parents sort of go, well, yeah, I mean, we're doing our best. We're doing the best we can. And by the way, there's that verse in Hebrews that says that our parents did the best they could. Like, I lean on that hard because at some point my kids are going to look back and go, what an idiot. Right. And I'm going to lean go, man, I hope they know I was doing the best I could. But the problem is it doesn't hurt. It just quietly costs you years with your kids. Right. And next thing you know, you sit around on a Sunday night as you're getting ready for work and you look around and everyone's on their devices, if they're still hanging out in the same room with you, or they're somewhere else and you just don't even, you know, it's not that you don't care. It's that you've lost the energy to care. It's not bad. We don't need counseling. We don't need to do, but it's, you know, it's fine. That's the problem, right? It's the someday parent. When this travel season's over, as soon as they get out of elementary school, man, once they start driving, like, it's someday we're going to do all these things that we said we're going to do, right? Or it's the maintainer. Like, the kids are fine. Like, no news is good news. So we're good. So I think you get a lot of families that live in this default. They're not bad. The problem with default generally is that as soon as a small crisis comes, it spins everything quickly. People don't live in default very long, right? A parent loses the job. It spins the family out, right? A parent gets a huge promotion. It could spin the family out, for better or for worse. So we don't live there wrong, right? The way back, though, isn't a speech. It's not a vacation. There's got to be care before some correction type stuff. Like, we've got to work through it. And then you get to a dying family, right? So think about a dying family. They're roommates, right? And doors are closed. Kids aren't talking. Kids can't wait to leave. When do I get to be 18? How soon can I get out of here? I don't want to be here. There's no emotional margin. You're yelling all the time. So nobody wants to say anything because dad may lose his mind again. Yeah. Right. That's hard too. If, like, you know, me, I joke with people that I'm loud because in my house growing up, if you weren't screaming, nobody heard you. And it's not because the house was really big, but that's the way it was. And so anger has always been a thing. Right. And it drove me to counseling one time years ago to go, okay, I don't want my kids to wince every time someone spilled milk at the table when they were seven, because the air gets sucked out of the room. Because how's dad going to react this time, kind of thing, right? But small things in a dying family culture blow up, right? I mean, people can get divorced over major things, but when you go, what was the final breaking point? It was something so small. You're like, really? That's what did it? It wasn't that. It was all the other things that went to it, right? And then you get a dread culture. And this is where I will lean, because I lean into operational. It's performance-based approval. It's your identity, and your value in this family is based on your identity, which is based off what you do, either for the family or within a sport, within band, within your extracurricular activities or whatever else that looks like. Is your room always picked up? Are you wearing a belt to church? That was a big deal in my house growing up. You had to wear a belt to church. I let that go a long time ago. Really? Haircuts. No. You're not getting your hair like that. Listen, best rule I've ever come up with for myself on haircuts with my boys. I will take you once every 8 weeks and I will pay for it. Once you get to be 16, you have to pay for every other haircut. You can do whatever you want with your hair. I don't care. But if you don't like it, I'm not taking you back. And if I am, you're paying for it. And here's my hourly rate of my time. Yeah. My youngest son, wanted to grow his hair out and get a perm.
I've had this conversation.
So this is a great, but this, this proves the point though. So I get a phone call from my wife and after it's over, I go, hey, how'd it go? Video. And I see it and I'm like, oh, all right. How you feeling? He goes, I'm okay. Later that night, I'm talking to my wife. I go, his older brothers are going to eat him alive. Yeah. Yeah. So he goes to school the next day, sitting in the drop off line. Won't get out of the car. Mm. The perm is now weighing much heavier than those wavy locks kind of looked until he saw a friend. But it was that point going, we're not changing it. Right. Mm-hmm. But dread cultures and families, it's about meeting a standard and expectation. Your kids obey, but they don't bring you anything of any real substance. Right. You get the forged parent creates this. My dad was hard on me. Suck it up, buttercup. Like it worked for me. I turned out fine. Okay. You might be. That fine might be a stretch, but okay. So we get that, right? Your kids perform for you, but they don't confide and they leave at 18 and you know, they maybe don't call you, you're calling them all the time. Mm-hmm. I can go there very quickly. I travel quite a bit. I come home at the end of the week. I look at my kids and go, what the heck? You didn't do that. This isn't done. Mm-hmm. Your mom had to complain about that. You only did that halfway. What the heck? Mm-hmm. And they go, when's dad leaving again? And how long does he get to be gone this time? That's a dread. That's a dread culture, right? And then you get dreamy. So go the other direction, right? This is best friend parenting, right? This is a high warmth with no spine. Threats a follow through, but we don't ever do it, right? Like how many times did you look at your toddlers and they're young and go, you have until the count of three or else. One, two, and then you drag threat as long as humanly possible because you don't have the guts to follow through with whatever you just emotionally too quickly threatened that sweet little demon with, right? Mm-hmm. But it happens the same as we're older. Like, hey, I know I asked you to clean your room four times, but you're okay. Go with your buddies. It's fine. I know you'll get it next time. You've got a lot going on. You're in a lot of things. It's all of those types of things, right? And so there's no bite. There's no spine. There's no accountability. There's no push towards being better. You asked me about leaders under certain ages earlier before we start recording. Yeah. This is the parent, the kids who had everything done for them, right? Because mom just wanted to help. So I know he's 15. And so I'm still going to run his homework into him or his lunch. Cause he forgot, right? Like once my kids turn 16, I stop scheduling haircuts. Like you want a haircut, figure it out. You have a schedule, use your phone for something more than TikTok. Like there is a calendar on there. You should use it. Right. Like, but the dreamy gets to that. It's same as work. There's a lot of warmth there and it's not hard to move to dauntless there, right? It's actually way easier to get better if you have that than it's all dread, because it's harder to teach some of the emotional relationships. But that's dreamy. And then those two people, dread and dreamy people, usually marry each other. Right. Mm-hmm. So you get one is and the other one then will overcompensate for how irrationally painful the dread parent is. The dreamy parent then actually overcompensates even more because they feel like we have to make up for it. And then the one parent goes, well, if you're making up for being nice and I'll have to be double hard just because we're going to try to balance each other out without ever really talking about it as a family or as parents. Yeah. And we want to get to dauntless. That's really where I want to get to, right? Standards with love. Right? I love you enough. I'm going to tell you no. Like I always tell people, like at some point, especially when my kids, Joel, were probably your ages, and Andy, I know where yours are as well. If they didn't, at least one of them didn't look at me once a week and go to tell me I was the worst parent in the world, I probably am not doing my job the way I want to be doing it. Right. Kids are known and they're sharpened. They can launch at 18. Right. And in my world, I give them my definition at 16 and go, okay, you got a couple more years, but I'm expecting this now from you, and you can then embrace it however you want. Hard conversations happen at kitchen tables. Right. Or they happen with a parent. And there are times where my kids will go to Amber first because she's way more relational and they'll know that. And there are times, unfortunately, they're like, I don't want to tell Dad. Will you sort of do the setup for me? And that's my reminder. I got to be a little better. And she'll be like, listen, he's going to come tell you something. Here's what you can't do. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. No, I know. She's like, I know, you know, but knowing is different than doing, man. Like, right. Okay. Yeah. Families get here on purpose. They get here on purpose, right? You push warmth and standards at the same time. Every season is a new test.
Yeah.
New school year. Now you're driving. What does Dauntless look like now? Because now I want to hammer rules because you're driving, right? So curfew, and what does that look like? Like, or now, hey, you're off to college. Okay, you're 18 and you're off to college. Now, I still have some skin in the game and I'm paying for some of it or whatever that looks like. But I remember telling Evan when he went to college, I go, listen, man, I got three rules. Study really hard. Get good grades. Don't do anything illegal. And I would prefer you not get anybody pregnant.
Yeah.
Those are it. Like, I had a bunch of rules and said, if you do that, I'm not paying. Well, that got me. When I got what it did get me is when he called me and goes, hey, here's what I'm dealing with. What do you think? And that's that stage of life you're getting ready to go into. And it's really hard, by the way, when you still have a youngest kid at home.
Yeah.
So I have a 16-year-old at home still and a 23-year-old that's out and a 19, like, and the 16-year-old goes, well, that's not fair, Dad. I'm like, hold on, you're 16. And by the way, I'm a different person when you were 16 now than when Evan was.
For
like,
sure.
I go back eight years ago. I go, holy cow, the 8-year ago version of me was an idiot. Mm-hmm. Like, Evan's lucky to be able to function as I raised him. So we have that, right? They're kids who leave home and they're ready, but they'll still call and they still want to come back. So that's the box. So then we just ask, well, I ask leaders, and you can ask dads, all right, where are you pushing?
Yeah.
And if you're not pushing, I know what's happening.
Yeah.
It's not getting better on its own. And so then you have to go, well, how do I push? Where do I need to push? This moment right now calls for me to push relationally. So I just got to lean in. Yeah. I got to set aside the outcome for the good of something else. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I've got to set that aside. Or, you know what? I actually need to hold the standard. I said, you're not going to go if you don't have it done. That means I'm not just going to take your word for it that your room's clean.
Yeah.
Send me a picture, send me a video, FaceTime me, or I could just get off the couch and walk up the 14 stairs and check the room. But how many times do we not do that? Mm-hmm. And then we get mad when that happens at work. I mean, think about it, right? Yeah. The boss says, it's not done. It's done. And they don't check. And then they're mad at you. Like, they're the exact same. Yeah. They really are. Now, if we did an assessment for families, we'd have to come up with different questions, but it's the exact same thing. Right. Yeah. And so then we start going, what kind of culture do you want? And so we talk about dads going, I want a dauntless culture. So what do I have to push? Where do I have to push? Right. And it usually starts with your spouse and what that relationship looks like. And then you push down to your kids, which is why having the clarity and all that, it gets to be so important.
I think so many times about you mentioned the marital relationship is often at the center of this and how we're relating with each other. And I, you know, Andy, I think about Jackie and I, she's about ready to go back in her travel season here for work, where I am, for better or worse, handling the a few days at a time, handling the operations of the family while she's wherever she is in the country, so Dustin, you can tell me what you think. I have used the term frequently, and this is nothing against my wife, but I've used the term, okay, Mom is going to be back at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, my friends, and I just did a walkthrough of our house and you have 48 hours, my friends, to do the things you know you're supposed to do, which is another aside. We have a rotating monthly, we'll call it chore chart or whatever it is, this monthly rotates. And boy, oh boy, when it's working. And when it's not. And we have yet to, like, what's interesting is that's a system we put in place. And it's been better. I'm glad we have done it, and it's better than doing it than not doing it. Yep. We're trying to create rhythms and responsibilities, all of that. What amazes me, and I've just been wondering, is that though the quality of the outcomes around that chart vary drastically routinely. And I'm from a business perspective, I'm like, no, listen, we put the SOP in place here.
That's right. Paul.
I have communicated the expectations. There's details on this chart. There's no loop. We're trying to get rid of the loopholes here, people. And yet it varies consistently. And so then I'm also in conjunction with that, having the conversation of, though I know that because we have the system in place, things should look like this by this period of time when your mom will return. There's a few things there. I now have sometimes not the greatest confidence that will actually be the case. Number one. And number two, and this is the part that I get concerned about, is I am leveraging their mom's alleged rage against them, because it's like motivating with fear.
It's a great motivator.
It will work immediately.
Great as in it works. I don't know. It's a great one to leverage.
Right.
Yeah.
It's great to work.
Great that it works, but it's not a sustaining.
No.
Whether in family or family or business. I wonder, you know, Dustin, from your perspective on the sustaining rhythms of all of this, right? Yeah. Because we can. I mean. I think Andy and I both, as we were watching, I'm like, we have felt all of these dynamics and we know they're sort of self-evident, but until you say them out loud, like, it's like, oh, that's what's happening. Got it. You know?
Yep.
I think about the sustaining nature of this. And I do think like so much of it does begin with us, like on the family side with us as parents, like, and this would be a big, I think it'd be a criticism that my wife would have of me. Cause I know that because she just told me this, like, Joel, you can't just say, go and do the thing. And then when I ask you, hey, did so-and-so do something? And my response is, I told them. And she's like, and
that's the work equivalent of going, I sent an email.
Yeah.
I sent an email. What do you
I told them. And obviously they do everything that I instruct them to do.
Clearly.
Did you go and look? Did you check up on the, and if I'm really, really honest, there's a gap for me in the follow through of like, I went 75% of the way there and then left it there. And I think the follow through piece. And as I've talked with many of families, multiple kids, we've got the jobs, we've got all the things. Follow through feels like it's an extra expense that I'm not able to pay kind of deal.
Yep.
What is that? What do we do about it? What conversations do we have around it?
So I think the big distinction between work and home is that at work, you're dealing with, at least by age, adults.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Who probably aren't going to be growing and changing the way your kids are.
Yeah.
Now you'd like some of them to grow and, you know, but Susan hasn't changed her mind in 35 years. So you're not going to get her to do it. Yeah. Now.
We all know.
We all know Susan.
That's right.
The fact that you all pointed at each other says something. Yeah. Anyways, but at home, the rhythms with your kids being, 10, 8, 6, and 4 is very different than when they're, when my kids were 19, 17, 15, and 13, as they are now when they're 23, 21, 19 and 17, and I've got, you know, one in the house and two in the house or whatever it is. So I think that's the piece to remember first.
Yeah.
And then I go back to, okay, at the end of the day, what is the realistic expectation for the team I'm working with? Yeah. Right. Cause running a house is essentially just a group project that feels like it never ends.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's funny you say that. My wife's at a conference. She's been in Columbus, Ohio since Thursday afternoon. She gets home tomorrow afternoon. I'm leaving tomorrow morning for a week of work. So we're sort of going to cross paths via phone. And so I did the same thing. I've cleaned the kitchen. I've done all the things. And there will be times even now where Amber and I will clean the kitchen. I will send a text message to the kids who are still up and in their different parts of the house, or they're out or whatever. I will, if it doesn't look like this in the morning, I'm going to assume you chose violence and I will wake you then.
Yeah.
Right. Because I'm trying to set, I'm like, I sent a picture. This is the standard.
Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. I think this is where I always come back to going, what am I raising them towards?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the reasonable outcome, right? Yep. This idea of major on the major and minor on the minors. I used to be really, really good at majoring on minor issues. Haircuts are minors. Belts to church are minors, right? For the four-year-old to have matching shoes when they go grocery shopping is a minor, but how many times are parents enraged before they ever get to the grocery store because they had trouble getting the four-year-old dress? Like, what do you expect? Let her put on whatever she wants.
Right.
If anyone judges you, that's the problem, is we are just like at work, by the way, we are more worried about what other people think about us than what our kids do. So the way you work that is you go, what's the reasonable expectation? You use the word gap. Like, what's the gap? Anytime we're talking about culture, we have a gap from where we are to where we want to get to. Okay. Well, how do we close the gap? Right. Well, we talk about this thing we call the counterforce loop. So I'm going to walk you through sort of these six steps we use to close any gap. And we'll talk about them just at home. The first part is you have to tell the truth. You have to tell the truth. You have to tell the truth to yourself first.
Yep.
And then with your spouse, because they know you better than any other adult, right? You have to tell the truth. And the problem is we don't like the truth. If the truth doesn't make us a little uncomfortable, we've probably softened it so much it doesn't have any bite. Mm-hmm. I'm not very good at following through. That's the truth. Yep. Well, my follow through could be a little better. That's soft, right? And eventually it gets so soft, I don't have to do anything about it. Name what you've been tolerating operationally or relationally. The first thing you got to decide, right? What have I been tolerating? Right. And could you write it in a sentence? So, and by the way, this will probably be different. It could be for the family, but you could have it for every kid. Mm-hmm. Every kid's going to have a gap from where they are to where you want them to get to. Right. And then you have to have an honest diagnosis. You have to diagnose honestly. So which axis, is it an operational issue or is that a relational piece? Because I'm going to lean to try to fix it operationally. And that's not what he needs. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need operations. He needs me to lean in. He needs me to lean in relationally. And this is where you need your spouse to press on you to go, no, they don't need more, my wife would say, my dad's name was Scott. She would go, you'll get into your Scotty mode. They don't need more Scotty mode, which is ranting and raving to get compliance because that's what he did. And that's what I modeled. So when something's not getting done the way I want, I'm going to Scotty mode. She says, that's not what they need. Right. So you need your spouse or you need other men around you to push on you. Hey, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what's going on. What do I do? Right. Or here's what I'm thinking about doing. What do you know that I don't know? It's why other men need to know your kids.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. They got to know your kids because if don't, you have no idea and you're going to miss it. So tell the truth, diagnose honestly, and then reset what's broken. Reset it, reset the standard. And by the way, it's one standard. Too many times. And we've done this and you mentioned chore charts, but how many times can you go, none of this is working. Here's the 17 new things we're going to do starting Monday.
Yeah.
How many times does that work at work? When you go, you know what? How many times does it work with your own health? Like, you know what?
Right.
I'm going to get to bed early. I'm going to track my sleep. I'm going to be up at 5 a.m. I'm going to drink 18 glasses of water. I'm going to eat 197 grams of protein. And I'm going to work at. No. Just pick one.
Nope.
Just pick one standard. Give it a date by which you're going to do it and one owner. Not five things. Just one. Just pick one, right? Reset what's broken. Just one thing. And then you have to hold the line. Yeah, this is where it sounds like. Yeah. Your wife would say hold the line. The line isn't hard to hold when it's going well. It's really hard to hold on a Tuesday night when you just got back from three different practices and you're just flipping exhausted. It's hard to hold when you look at your summer and go, well, yeah, we're at the Ball Diamond 9 nights a week and 7 hours on a Saturday, Sunday. And we're not, that's when it gets tested. Mm-hmm. How well do you hold the line? Right. And by the way, you will have a kid or more. If you have multiple kids, you'll have at least one that knows exactly where the crack is.
Yeah.
They know where to push. They, by the way, because they've seen you do it, right? Mm-hmm. When you don't hold the line for your own standard, right? Like if I want to yell at my kids to put dishes away, but mine's sitting there, hold the line, right? If I'm not doing it first, then I can't hold the line on them. And when they don't, I got to hold the line. I did it today. I literally, my kid disappeared from the kitchen. And I'm looking at dishes and I yell his name and he won't come. So I do what we all do now. I called him. He was down in the basement. I called him. I go, Liam, come up here. What? I go, I'm not doing this over the phone. Come up here. So he came up. I go, any of this yours? Well, yes, it is. Please put it away. Right. That's holding the line. Could I have? And then he'd be like, well, it's just a cup. Son, it is so much more than just a cup. Mm-hmm. Right. Because now I'm thinking about you as an adult. Oh, it's just one class. It's just one. Whatever it is, right? And then you have to show visible progress. That's the fifth step, is you have to show visible progress, which means you have to be able to tell your kids, hey, I really appreciate it. Look how much better this has been. Hasn't it been great not fighting about the dishes this week? Mm. Man, it's been so good. Wasn't it great to have mom not come home as a category 5 hurricane because we didn't do the thing we're supposed to do, right? And then the trick, the last step of that is to just repeat it under pressure.
Yeah.
So pick a gap. Tell the truth, diagnose it honestly, reset one standard, hold the line, even when it's hard, show progress and then pick another gap. And that's how families move forward. Mm-hmm. And you, by the way, you all and your listeners, you could look at your kids now and go, oh, I did that with them that one time when we did the thing. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like that. And it, if that sounds exhausting, it is because it's just a constant thing of loop. So how do you do it? Yeah. You recognize, okay, what's the realistic expectation, right? My 16-year-old doesn't have the same standard as my 21-year-old. Mm-hmm. That's not fair to the 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Right. It's easier for me. Right. Just like at work, it's not fair to hold the standard for the guy or the expectation from the guy who's been here 10 years to the brand new person. Mm-hmm. Like there's gotta be a little bit of room for personality. Right. And all of those types of things.
Yeah.
As you're looking, you've sort of named things as you're looking at your kiddos now. And as they're, I mean, they're close to being so close to being fully out of the house. How do you and your wife talk about your empty nest years? What is the, because we say this on the show all the time. Mm-hmm. We're raising kids that we do want to hang out with when they're adults. This is because we'll spend more time with them as adults than we will at any other time. Which feels, by the way, crazy to me because we're putting so much effort into these years.
Yeah.
And it feels like they take a while.
Yep.
And then some of us have had multiple children and just spread that period out over time. Like I remember I was telling my daughter who's now 10 and is super smart and can appreciate this. I was like, you know, Molly, before we knew that we were going to have you, I had calculated that all your three brothers were going to be out of the house and I was going to be 48 years old. And that felt really great to me. Cause it's like, I'll have lots of energy left and I'll have like, I'm gonna have all these kids out. We started early and we moved on. And then I said, and then we had you. And now I'm going to be 52 before. but then she goes, and then she's smart as all, but she's like, Dad, those last 3 years though, it's just going to be me. Isn't that going to be great? And I go, actually it is going to be.
She's going to be really great for you.
Well, and that's the same thing too. Like with Hattie, we're, you know, a lot of times we're like, you know, you're going to be the only one here for a long time. And she's like, yes.
Yeah, about time.
Oh, yeah. My youngest is already bragging about the spring break trips he'll take these last 2 years that his brothers never did.
So good.
Because I only have to pay for one kid. It's all those things. Right.
But as we think about toward that end, what is a job well done for you? What do those years after they are the house in light of all this work that we're doing? Cause doggone it. There better be an ROI
better work,
here.
It better work.
What's the hope?
Yeah. So let me start with this. People always said, hey, you're going to miss it when they were young and they were in all those other stages. They go, oh, you're going to miss that stage. Mm-hmm. And I, every time, no matter when it was, I would always look at them and go, try me.
Yeah.
I'm still that way. I don't miss it. Mm-hmm. Like I enjoyed them.
Yeah.
I would never want to go back. Yeah. Right. So what does it look like now? Success look like now for me? I think it's that idea is like, we're getting glimpses of it. So we took a road trip this summer as a family to Montana. We've been going out every summer. I do a bunch of work out there, but this year we took a literal road trip. Like they rented a 15 passenger van and they all drove out. Amber, the four boys, Liam took a buddy. We took the dog and the older three girlfriends all came with us.
Oh, wow. Mm.
We figured we're just going to pressure test every relationship we got right now. Let's just right now.
Road trips are good for that.
They are great for that. And then I drove back with them.
Okay.
And so it was like 4,300 miles over the course of a week. And so there were times when we were sitting around with most of the family and the girlfriends and we were playing Dutch Blitz. And I had this moment of like, this is it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a job well done. Mm-hmm. They want to be around. They still want to go on a vacation with, of course they do. Cause I'm paying for it. So like, of course they're going to go cause they don't have any money to do any of this cool stuff. And my third son's a golfer. He'll play anywhere. I want to play golf. Cause he knows I'm paying for it. But that to me, that's a job well done. Right. Yeah. And aside from that, even if it wasn't, they always wanted to be around us. Right. I look at my oldest son who now has a real job. Mm-hmm. And he's working through figuring out what budgeting looks like. My second son who said, hey, I'm going to live up at the house this year. My job here fell through. Dad, I worked the budget. I got it all done. I think I'm going to be fine. And I'm going, okay, at 19, you got that, right? Yeah. I've got my third son who's going, hey, I'm going to IU. Here's what it looks like. And here's what I think I'll graduate with, you know, I'll graduate debt free or this is what I'll have. Like I get glimpses of it, right? I don't think I'll ever get the full picture of it. I think we get the full picture of it in hindsight, but we get these moments, right? Joe, my second son, came home because he turned 21 this weekend. So he had a Thursday, so he had to get a driver's license. So him and the girlfriend came home. And so we went out to dinner. Amber was gone, but we went out to dinner. It was him, his girlfriend, Owen and the girlfriend, and Evan. And we were just laughing. Like, they were still not adults, because again, the whole frontal lobe isn't developed till 25 kind of thing. But it's conversational. Yeah. I'm not managing a dinner like, stop it. Will you stop picking on your brother? Stop. Put that down. Do not.
So that actually happens eventually?
Yes, it does. It doesn't ever go away. You just say it less. Yeah. And what you threaten is, you don't threaten spankings, and you don't threaten, what you start threatening is like, I'm not going to pay your insurance kind of things. Like, I can't, you know, my boys always wanted to wrestle, and there was a time when I could handle them. Right. Yeah. And it, even when they were probably bigger and stronger, like, I have a higher pain tolerance and I'm not above fighting dirty, so I can still win. But there got to be a point where I knew I couldn't. Yeah. Like, when my oldest just firearm picked me up over his shoulder, I just said, listen, if you don't put me down, I will not pay your State Farm bill. So you get, it doesn't go away, Andy, but you just learned that it gets to be different. So for me, that's well done. Mm-hmm. They want to be around. We get to enjoy them at a level where I'm like, okay, I could hang out with them and we can have fun, but yeah, they're still our kids and we still get all of that, but that's what we're working towards. 'Cause now I project that. Mm-hmm. 10 years down the road or 15 years down the road. And I start going, okay, now what could that look like? But that means I better know where I'm pushing them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It means I better know what am I trying to get them to?
Yep.
Because otherwise I'm just going to leave it up to the poll. The world will tell them where to end up.
And when we're looking right now, I mean, and friends, the current, this is why we have Marky Mark here. You could look at the current numbers. The percentage of children, adult children, that are estranged from their parents, I think it's in the 35 to 40%. The number is strikingly high. And I think it's easy for us. It would be easier for us to say, that alienation or that distance is because of being overly heavy-handed with kids and overly controlling and all these sort of things. I want to actually bet it's on the other. I want to bet it's on their side. I want to bet that it is families that are removed from each other, that are not having the hard conversations, correct, that are not looking at the dashboard and saying, man, what can we press into? What can we be more intentional with? If we're talking about like an epidemic level of family, sort of family distancing and estrangement, that estrangement is probably coming much more from a place of lack of intention than it is over and over. And
there's no push. Yeah. There's just no push, or it's the push in the wrong. It's not the push in the best direction. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I'm pushing all towards operational excellence. It's about grades. It's about your GPA. It's about what school you go to. It's about how much money you're making, or we just push relationally. You can't blame your kids or your spouse for the culture. That's like blaming the scoreboard for the score. That's not how it works, right? Yeah. Like, it's on you. Yeah. So it starts with you as a parent first. Do your own work, right? Leaders, we talk about leaders the same way. Like, that's why when we do leadership development, we do personal development first. Because listen, like, leaders aren't any different than people. And if you can't lead yourself well, then how in the world are you leading anybody else at work or not?
Okay, it's roughly 16% of American adults are estranged from a parent. Specific studies on parent, adult, child dynamics show that 26% of adults are estranged from their fathers and about 6% to 11% are estranged from their mothers.
Yeah. So, well, there you go, dads, by the way, like yet again, right?
Yeah. And the problem is when you have kids that get to be that way, a kid resisting is almost never, ever a rules problem. Mm-hmm. It's always a relational, right? Yeah. It's always right. A stricter phone policy with your kids isn't going to encourage them to talk to you more. Mm-hmm. It's not, right? Because they're more emotional, because of the whole brain development thing, you have to be more emotional. Mm-hmm. You have to be more relational. Yeah. Like you have to be, right? You have to do it. And you can't do it by yourself. In a family, it takes the spouse, mm-hmm. right? It takes another adult. And there will be times where my wife, I'll never forget. My wife looked at me and was like, between the two of you, someone needs to be the adult in the room. And it's probably not going to be the 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. So Dustin, can you be the adult? Right. And so that's what it takes. And if you don't do it now, by the time they're 16, 15, 17, whatever that is, it's almost too late to get to that. That's why it starts early. And there's got to be some level of intentionality of where am I taking them? It's never too late to start, but it probably is going to be a harder first conversation to go, hey, I've sort of told myself some truth and here's where I'm at. Here's where I've messed up. Here's where I've not been very good specifically. I'm asking your forgiveness and a commitment that I'm going to do better.
Well, and I think too, that helps bring that culture to your family too. When they know that they can trust you to be open in your mistakes with them, they're more willing to be able to go to you and say, hey dad, I messed up, or, you know, be open with you on that.
Absolutely. So, like if you go, my kid will never apologize. Well, when was the last time your kid heard you say you were sorry? If you don't think your 9-year old knows when you're acting like an idiot, no, they fully know.
Right.
So when have you apologized for a behavior that you want them to apologize for? Right. And again, if people haven't done that work, it's why you see grown adults acting like 5-year olds in the cereal aisle, not getting their way. They just don't have the skills. And some of it's on them, but some of it's they were raised that way, right? Like we gotta, as adults, we have to be in a spot for ourselves first, and then for our spouses, and then ultimately for our kids to get the culture we want.
The good biblical truth, these words of Jesus, that wisdom is proven right by her children. And I just thought about that multiple times, that there will be outcomes here that aren't immediate and obvious, that will take time. But then when our kids begin to rate like this, because this you're a little bit closer to this than we are, like the grandparent stage, which is going to be freaking awesome for you, Dustin. I got a good feeling about this one. But like and mostly because just at the baseline, because your kids are still talking to you, which is like, that's a good place to start. But to see a generational iteration of these play out, your kids will play this out differently than you did.
And
that is fine. And that is good. Because I think, you know, for our listeners, I think what you're hearing here is frameworks, general helpful directions, streams that you should not be in. What you won't hear is a step-by-step, do it this way and only this way, because you are all fearfully and wonderfully made. You're different. You're wired differently. Your family dynamics might be different, but truth is truth. Good is good. Bad is bad. And so live in those places, have the conversations that need to be had.
I think we think about train up a child in the way they go, and when they won't depart. And we think of that as going, well, this step and then this step and this, and it's not. To me, it's about what are the guardrails? Mm-hmm. What's the boundaries for who you're going to be as a person, right? That go back to the dear boy's book about going, what does it actually mean to be a man of God who has kingdom impact on your family, friends, and community by thinking differently, leading courageously, living passionately? Start with that, make it whatever you want. Yep. But if I lay the groundwork, your feet are in the right direction. What path you take is going to be very different for each one of those kids, because God has created them differently.
Right. They're each, right? Every different kid.
I know which way they're going to go. Mm-hmm. If I were to say, hey, we're going to Chicago. We're going to go to Sears. We're going to Sears Tower.
That
might show you how old I did just turn 50. But anyways, you're going to there. We could all go there and we could all go different directions. But we'd still get there. And I think too many times as parents, because we're worried about what other people think of us, well, you got to go this way. We got to do that. Well, which is why if you're the youngest kid showing up at the school, you go, and then they look at you, oh, you're Evan's younger brother. You're so-and-so's younger brother. Yeah. And instantly all the good and bad get projected on that kid.
Yeah.
Right. Which is why sometimes the second one or third one will completely go off the rails just because like, well, I didn't want to be like my older brother.
Yeah.
So I'm going to intentionally be just the opposite. So I think that's it. Like what's the path, man, where do I want their eyes and where do I want their feet? And now let them walk, let them change lanes. Like at some point my kids are going to come and go, hey, I got a job. We're moving.
Yeah.
I'm like, I want you to move. Like I wasn't on the committee though. They didn't ask my opinion, and that's okay, because I'm not going to get in the way of that. If we say we're doing all the right things, and when it comes time for them to execute on the things we trained them on, we better sit back and be quiet and actually prove it out.
Yeah.
So many times I think we're so scared to let our adult-ish children do that because we're like, well, I want to make that decision for them. Like, because I don't want it to be bad. Well, come on, you all know the best. I mean, you learned more from any bad decisions than good ones.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And just hopefully those, my goal is that my kids' bad decisions are not like the kind that just like, you know, ruin their life forever. Right.
Yes.
Like they're safe. Right, yeah. They're safe. Bad decisions. They're safe and safer. Bad decisions.
Absolutely. There are. And I always wanted my kids to make bad decisions in the thinking process, but never in the execution kind of thing. Right. And there are decisions that my kids are going to make that they have a different framework, right? Mm-hmm. Because there were things in my family history that I broke. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are things in my wife's family history that we broke that, that my kids aren't growing up with. Yep. Mm-hmm. They don't have some of the memories that I have and some of that baggage to work through. So they're already, we're already pushing them towards dauntless a little bit in that way.
Yeah.
Oh, the dauntless family. Friends, it is possible. It is good and it is possible. We also, you've maybe heard it sprinkled in here through this conversation. What makes it possible is, first and foremost, that the God is part of that conversation, right? And that we're not just depending on our, if this was a, it, please don't hear that this conversation is under our own power and under our own strength, right?
We need
our community and we need our community creator and we need our God to be coming alongside and guiding and directing those steps. Cause none of us are smart enough to do it on our own, and we'll choose the easier path 9 times out of 10. And that is, I don't know, something about destruction, something about, the Bible says a lot of things about that path. So let's just help each other out. Let's not do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Andy, now, so Dustin, first of all, that's phenomenal. That's fantastic. We're going to, the stuff that Dustin has shared here, we're going to make him available. So you know how to get a hold of him, whether you're just trying to figure out next steps, maybe for family. I'm sure Dustin would love to have a word with you.
Dustin, how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah. So the easiest way is going to be finding me on LinkedIn or Instagram, Dustin Carr. They can also email me.
How do you spell your last name?
Oh, geez. Okay. So it's K-A-E-H-R. Yep. K-A-E-H-R. But you'll have to put it in the notes and we'll give you my email.
Yes. Yeah.
And all of that stuff.
As always, you can head over to dudesanddads.com and we've got all of our show notes and we'll make Dustin just annoyingly simple to find out on the interwebs, and all of that will be good. But this is a conversation all of us need to be having, friends. I really feel like, Andy, I mean, this conversation is a way of, it sort of summarizes the hope for this show in general, that we're just being intentional as men, as husbands, as fathers. We're also linking arms with our brothers here, right? Like, and just saying like, hey,
let's make stronger family.
Yeah. Let's do this together. We're on a mission together for it. So that's really, really good. And I appreciate it. Obviously before we let Dustin go though, we have to do something.
And now it's time for the Dudes and Dads pop quiz.
Fantastic.
All right. Okay. So I'm going to let Marky Mark answer the first one over there in the shadows. I can't see you, Mark.
Mark, are you teed up for this? Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. Let's have it, Mark. First question.
We're going to do this one a tiny bit different.
Okay. Okay.
I can't wait.
I expect nothing less.
The option.
Oh. Oh.
1 through 5. I've got 5 in the chamber ready to go.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
Number one.
Okay.
Ooh, number one. If a penguin in a visor walked in this room right now, what would he say and why is he here?
The penguin's wearing a visor?
Yeah, well, yeah.
What's he going to say and why is he here?
Why is he here and what is he going to say?
Okay. We tried to warn you, Dustin.
There was no adequate warning for that.
Nope.
Just so we're clear. A penguin walks into this room wearing a visor. Why is he here? Why is he here and what does he say?
Yeah, absolutely. We all want to know.
Well, he's here because he got dropped off because penguins can't drive.
There we go.
He is wearing a visor, though.
How?
What kind of, like, okay. So I think visor as in like a golfing hat visor. Are you thinking he's wearing like a helmet with a visor?
In my mind, it's a green like car dealer's visor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very, very specific.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, geez. Okay. So I'm still going to stick with he's here because he got dropped off because he can't drive. And he's going to say, anybody want to play poker?
Okay.
Because he's got that hat on.
Perfect.
I don't know. That's what I would have said had you not said the visor.
Those are you who are watching on YouTube. I just put a picture of a penguin and a visor on screen. Chat GPT created it. But
I did it. Okay.
I have to do that.
Thanks, Mark.
He doesn't get any more questions, does he?
Nope. That's it. He's right. Been sequestered.
four more.
We did all that work to set a microphone up for that. So, yeah. Okay. Just so we're clear.
Yeah, that's all good. Right. My question, Dustin, if you need to hide a body, which one of your family members are helping you out?
My third son.
Okay.
Owen.
What is it about Owen that uniquely qualifies him for that job?
The reason it took me a second is because I was debating between my second son and my third son.
Love it.
Now between the two, Owen is, he's wicked smart. He is so black and white. That it would just become surgical.
Yeah, yeah.
Surgical, but yeah. I just think that in a pinch like that,
yep.
He would be calm and cool.
Yep.
He might ask me like, why'd you do that? But he'd be
with you.
Lawyer-like, yes. At it.
That's right.
And I think he'd come up with some great ideas.
Okay.
All right. So you mentioned playing games on this last family road trip that you Dutch Blitz or whatever. What is your favorite game to play with your family and why?
Favorite game to play with my family. So individually, if I'm going to play with one of them, it's backgammon.
Okay.
I love that game. If we play as a family, we've played Dutch Blitz as probably,
and it's
probably some recency bias, but
aggressive.
We've had to buy some expander packs to do it. But yeah, it can be fairly aggressive. Growing up, it was Aggravation. If you remember the board game with the marbles, I've seen boards get flipped before. So that aggressive kind of game works for me. So, a game like Dutch Blitz is pretty good.
Okay. Let's see here. Because you travel a lot. This, you know, we should, for those that travel more, worst airport experience.
We were going to Florida a few years ago for Christmas, snowing in South Bend, and it was like 7, 8, 9 inches, and we got delayed, and then we went through Charlotte. We were supposed to land in Orlando, but we got diverted to Fort Lauderdale. And so it was, with all the kids, it was terrible.
Yeah.
We got in early the next morning. We were at the airport at like 6 a.m. Didn't get until almost like 2 a.m. back into Orlando after we rented a car and drove. I about assaulted a guy at Walgreens in front of my 9-year-old because he was trying to tell me I didn't know how to run the self-scanner after I'd been on the road for the better part of 17 hours. And I just was like, I know Jesus.
Yeah.
You might want to tell him hi for me.
Yeah.
So it was not my finest moment. I think the worst travel stories are always the ones with kids.
Yeah.
I can handle about anything by myself. I've had some rough layovers and many car rentals from Chicago or Minneapolis to drive home.
Yeah.
Nothing's worse than when you have your kids with you.
I'll do a follow up. Favorite airport. What do you think?
For me, it's either Minneapolis, Portland, Oregon has a really cool one, but I get through Minneapolis a lot. Okay. They've got a PGA lounge there that I get into so I can sit and watch golf or putt a little bit. They've got like 6 or 8 simulators.
Okay.
So if you ever fly through Minneapolis and you need a layover, it's right there at the end of the main mall area.
So, okay. That makes sense. Great.
Do we have one more yet? Okay. Hold on. Because I feel bad.
Okay.
What?
I'm going to take question number 3 from you. Let's get one more. And it cannot be. Hold on. I guess I'm going to give you the chance.
Yeah.
If it's weirder than the first one you asked, then just, I'm going to go. No, but if it's not, and I don't know if I can even trust your judgment on this.
Yeah, this is a good one. I mean, I have a weirder one, but this one's not. This is called the karaoke hostage situation.
Oh, okay. I like where this is going.
Your best friend, to save their life, you have to pick one song to perform in karaoke. What is it? And how confident are you that your friend survived?
Man, I really like the answer till this thought. The second part of that's really good. It's going to be, I'm going to give you a couple of different options. It's either going to be Friends in Low Places.
Great.
All right. Garth
Brooks.
Yeah.
Right. Great. I think I could do that. I could do Piano Man by Billy Joel. Yeah. And I could probably even do Paradise by the Dashboard Lights by Meatloaf. Mm. I think all three of those. I don't know that they would die. They might come out with a flesh wound or two, but I think they would survive. I think any three of those I could probably hit.
I have an early video of, I think it was Molly, or I'm singing Friends in Low Places, and I get the one line out. I go, blame it all on my roots. And then immensely she goes, no. She's like 2 years old. So
I love it.
I know. Right. I know what my outcome would be.
All right. Yeah. So what, Mark?
I'm just laughing at that. All right. That's good.
I promise mine will not be that weird.
Perfect.
This is my last one.
Okay.
If you pass this,
you're done.
You got to leave.
Yeah. You need to leave now.
It's going back to the traveling thing.
Okay.
So again, you travel a lot. So what's your favorite food that you have got when you were traveling somewhere?
Yeah. Okay. So I've traveled more this year than I ever have. So I've gotten to be a creature of habit and routines. Okay. So it's a couple things. It's Fairlife, protein milk with a double shot of espresso. So that's my iced coffee.
Oh,
that's it. Just go get the 42 gram protein and a double shot of espresso with a large cup of ice.
That sounds like a hack right there.
That's it. Okay. I buy Chobani yogurt when I travel. And when I'm in a car or on a plane, it's the mini Starburst, the mini chewy Starburst.
All right.
That's it. And probably a White Monster every now and then as well.
There we go. Okay.
It's the White Monster
that
does it all.
That's the meal. That's like the menu of champions, by the way. I don't know if you line with it all that Dustin, said, describe the person that would eat all
Dustin,
of this.
Dustin, are you 10 years old?
Yes. Yeah. Remember the whole.
No, because he said Chobani yogurt. Yeah, no 10-year-old eats yogurt.
That's right. That went old, man. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, hey, Dustin, congratulations. You have officially passed the Dudes and Dads Pop Quiz. I'm glad to have you along. As always, guys, you can head over to dudesanddads.com. You can check on all of the previous shows. Get our show notes from this episode. Like I said, we'll make Dustin easy to find. If you have a company, have Dustin come in and talk with your people. He will help you. It will be a good thing. So be sure to check out his site. We'll make sure that's available. Hey, as always, you can shoot us an email over at dudesanddadspodcast@gmail.com if you've got ideas for future shows, harsh criticisms you want to send our way.
Or we love those.
Future pop quiz questions. And because Mark is ready and waiting to take all of them. Okay. That's anything else, Andy?
Last but not least, I want to get a voicemail.
Thank you.
574-501-4467.
Yeah.
Call us.
Please do. Hey, everybody. Thanks for checking in with us, spending your time with us. We appreciate it. And until next time, we wish you grace
and peace.